James Dorsey has written for the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, a Christian Science Monitor, and UPI in the Middle East, Europe, Africa, Central America, and Washington. He's a freelance writer. He appears as a commentator on radio and TV. He is also a senior fellow at Nanyang Technological University's S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies. He is a writer, The Turbulent World of Middle East Soccer, at MideastSoccer.blogspot.com. And James Dorsey joins us on the Jeff Blair Show. James, thanks so much for doing this.
It's a pleasure to be with you. That's quite a mouthful, I'm afraid.
Yeah, I know. Well, I and you know what? The thing is, I didn't even have it spelt out phonetically. So hopefully I did it.
You did very well.
That's good. So put this in context for us. I know that from doing some reading, and actually yesterday I was in the office and I was watching it online in Al Jazeera, and I got on a couple of the Facebook pages that the teams had. And my understanding is that there's a dislike between the two groups of fans, El Ali and El Masri. But I also realize that, you know, El Ali in particular, there's a political connotation to this team, isn't there?
Well, basically, there's a political connotation to any team in the Middle East and North Africa.
Okay.
They were founded, they were political from their inception, and they've remained political all through. Al Ahly is the team that was founded about a century ago by the anti-colonial, anti-British nationalists. They were opposed to the monarchy at the time in Egypt, and they were Republicans. The most major rivalry in Egypt, which also historically, and one will see what happens now, is the most violent derby in the world, is not the one between Al Ahly and Al Masri, where the casualties fell last night, but the one in Cairo itself between Al Ahly and its rival Al Zamalek, which was the club of the British colonial administrators, their Egyptian allies, and the monarchists.
So, my understanding is that during the uprising that resulted in Hosni Mubarak being overthrown, that a lot of the street action, the fighting, was done, and I'm talking about the pro-uprising faction, a lot of the fighting was done by the ultras from Al Ahly, which is, ultras, I guess, for people who don't know, it'd be a hardcore, almost a gang of fans, wouldn't it?
It was not just the Al Ahly ultras. It was the ultras in Egypt, of which there were 30,000. Obviously, in Cairo, it was the Ahlis. It was primarily the ultras of the two teams, Al Ahly and Zamalek. The ultras are highly organized, highly politicized, violence-prone, street battle-hardened, militant soccer fan groups. They were formed, inspired to contact on the internet by similar groups in Italy and Serbia in about 2006, 2007. And for the 4 years that followed until the departure of Mubarak, they fought during soccer seasons virtually weekly battles with the security forces. By the time that the revolt erupted, the ultras were ready. They played a key role in breaking the barrier of fear, both in together with others, in leading groups out of the neighborhoods in Cairo towards Tahrir Square, which was the first time that Egyptians were willing en masse to go to the street to express their opinion. And once on the square, when they were attacked by the security forces as well as the Mubarak loyalists, they were the outer line of defense.
James Dorsey.
In fact, they were sort of the shock troops.
Right. James Dorsey is an expert on Middle East soccer. He joins us on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Now, El Masri, the incident last night, the home team, are they a political club? Are they at all affiliated with, or were they affiliated with the army or with Hosni Mubarak?
No, none of the ultras groups are were affiliated with anyone.
Okay.
They are fiercely independent, and they pride themselves on their independence. Now, the administration of soccer, whether it's the governing soccer body, or whether it was the boards of the various clubs, were all Mubarak-era appointees.
Okay.
In a few cases, including in Port Said, members of boards were forced to resign after the fall of the of Mubarak in demonstrations against them. There is a rivalry among virtually all clubs. Now, one thing to keep in mind is that about half of the Egyptian Premier League is, in effect, government-owned. If I'm not incorrect, four teams in Egyptian soccer are owned by the Egyptian military. One is owned by the border guards. One is owned by the police. Now, that doesn't mean that the fans necessarily are associated with those organizations.
From going on some of the social media sites and doing some of the social networking, and again, this may be from the Al Ahly fans in particular, but there seems to be a suggestion. First of all, there are pictures that on the internet of the Al Masry fans holding what appear to be the same type of truncheons that the police services were holding. There's pictures of them in the stands just before they invaded the field. Again, I don't know if those are accurate pictures, but it's out there in social media sites. The footage certainly shows a police force that was either in cahoots with the attack or just totally overwhelmed. Do you think something happened here beyond a group of soccer fans getting pissed off at another group of soccer fans? Do you see something beneath that as well?
Let's just take a step back for a second and look at the lay of the land. The lay of the land is on the side of the police. The police is one of the most disliked institutions in Egypt. It is widely viewed as the henchmen of the Mubarak regime. They have, over the past year, often been off the streets of Egypt. They've avoided being in the stadiums, or have been only minimally in the stadiums, in contrast to the heavy security that existed prior to Mubarak's fall, simply because they are trying to revamp their image.
Mm-hmm.
And in revamping their image, clashes with soccer fans does not help. On top of that, if there were an incident, then that would serve to demonstrate that Egypt risks descending into chaos and anarchy without the police there to prevent that. On the side of the fans, there is a deep-seated bitter resentment against the police who abused and used violence against them for years. And for some segments of the fans, their raison d'etre today is payback. Now, what happened in Port Said, I think, is unclear. Whether or not the police just simply did not step in because they did not want to be involved, because their concern is really not security, it's their image.
Mm-hmm.
And whether the fans, in that constellation went berserk, or whether there was a deliberate provocation. And there are increasing indications, it's all circumstantial evidence, evidence that would not stand up in the court. But that it doesn't need to stand up in the court. At the end of the day, what's going to decide this is how Egyptians perceive it. If Egyptians perceive this as having been the father of the ultras, then a development that has been taking place over the past year will be accelerated. And that development was that the ultras, once celebrated, were increasingly, together with other youth groups who were the core of the revolt against Mubarak, were becoming increasingly isolated in a country that is protest-weary, that despite the brutality of the military, still has faith in it, that is frustrated that there have been no immediate economic benefits from the revolt, and that wants a return to normalcy so that Egypt can get back on a road to economic growth. However, if it turns out that 74 people died in a deliberate provocation by the military, then that really could turn things around in terms of in favor of the ultras and the military and a military strategy backfiring.
The Egyptian Football Association was disbanded this morning by Parliament. Where does the sport go from here in Egypt? To focus on sports for a minute, will the league shut down? I mean, I can't imagine it would do. I would think the resulting turmoil would be almost worse if the league shut down.
The disbanding of the board was long overdue. These are Mubarak era officials who act as if Mubarak still had not left the country, had not left office. Keep in mind that the first thing that an Arab autocratic leader does when he is embattled is he suspends the soccer league because he's afraid that the soccer pitch will become an opposition rallying point. Soccer in Egypt last year, in Tunisia, in Libya, in Algeria, was suspended for 3 months. In Tehran, it was suspended for almost a month. In Syria and Yemen, it is still suspended. So it's probable, virtually likely, virtually certain that that this season's Premier League will be cancelled. That's obviously a setback for Egyptian soccer. Egyptian soccer is already feeling that for the first time in 29 years. A multiple African champion is not in the finals of the African Cup of Nations.
Mm-hmm.
But on the other hand, with this kind of turmoil, with a relationship between fans and players that is very strained because the players stood aside during the revolt, a management that's corrupt and politically compromised, it's healthier to take a step back and clean up and then move forward.
James, I appreciate you doing this. Thanks so much. You've given us, you've enlightened us greatly. And this, as I said, it's always when you look at complicated pictures and try to, try to make sense of something that, quite frankly, isn't in front of you all the time. It really helps to have someone who understands what's going on, at least put it in context. And we greatly appreciate you joining us this morning.
It was my pleasure.
Thank you. That is James Dorsey. He is a senior fellow at Nanyang Technological University's S. Rajaratnam School of International Studies in Singapore. He has been a journalist for the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times, the Christian Science Monitor, and formerly United Press International in the Middle East, Europe, Africa, and Central America. And you have probably seen him. He appears as a commentator on radio and television. I believe he's frequently on NPR as well. And we appreciate James Dorsey joining us.